Hi, I'm Rahel Philippos and you are listening to Three Things, the Indian Express News Show. In this episode, we talk about the death of a minister in Odisha due to bullet injuries. We also go over the latest updates on the Adani Group. But first, we talk about Siddique Kappan. On Thursday morning, Kerala-born journalist Siddique Kappan walked out of a Lucknow jail after being incarcerated for almost 2 years. Kappan was booked under UAPA, the anti-terror law, in 2020. He was detained in Uttar Pradesh when police stopped his vehicle from reaching Hathras. The journalist was on his way to the village where a 19-year-old woman from a Dalit family was gang-raped in September 2020. She died 2 weeks later in a hospital in Delhi. After walking out of prison, Kappan said that he will continue his fight against the quote-unquote draconian laws.
I will continue my fight against the draconian laws.
In this segment, the Indian Express's Asad Rehman, who met Kappan after his bail, explains to us why the journalist was in jail, how he secured bail, and his experience in prison. So Asad, before we get into bail and, you know, the eventual release of Kappan, can we revisit the case that landed him in jail in the first place?
Siddique Kappan and three others were arrested while they were on their way to Hathras. They were arrested from Mathura while they were traveling in a car and going to Hathras for a reporting assignment, as per Mr. Siddique Kappan. He says that he was going there to do a ground report on the Hathras gang rape that had happened in 2020. And on October 5, 2020, he was arrested by police along with three others. And they were sent to Mathura jail because they were arrested from Mathura. And initially, they were charged for promoting communal enmity and other such IPC sections. Whereas later, the police and the investigating agencies added other charges against all the accused in the case. And they charged him with the Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, which is the anti-terror law UAPA. And he was also charged for sedition and under the National Security Act and under other anti-terror laws and sections of the UAPA. The police had alleged that Mr. Kappan and the others were going to Hathras to spread unrest and to create communal enmity between groups, and they were going there to incite violence in the district.
Okay, and Kappan was booked in two cases and had to file for two bails. Can you briefly talk about the process he had to follow to get bail in both these cases?
So once he got bail from the Supreme Court in September in the UAPA case, which is the main case against him, then after acquiring bail for that case, he had to file another bail application in the Allahabad High Court, initially in the Sessions Court, and then which reached the Allahabad High Court, which was for the Public Money Laundering Act case, in which it was alleged that Mr. Kappan and the others who were arrested with him had brought in funds from abroad and were here on directions of PFI members to create unrest. So that was a PMLA case, which is money laundering. So in the first case that he got bail, which is under the UAPA anti-terror law, he had acquired bail from the Supreme Court in September. The process for getting bail and to be being released from jail requires a person to furnish sureties or personal bonds. Sureties are basically local people from within the state who sign a bond and who put up some papers of a belonging, like a car or a motorcycle or a property, saying that if I'm signing a surety on behalf of this person, in this case being Mr. Kappan. So in this case, Mr. Kappan's surety was signed by two people, two residents of Lucknow in the PMLA case. And the process takes, sometimes it takes a while to verify these sureties and to cross-check these sureties. And these people, in case Mr. Kappan fails to appear in court in the future, these people can be summoned by the court.
So Asad, you met Kappan after he was released. Can you tell us what he said about the case against him or his experience in prison?
So he was released on Thursday morning from the Lucknow prison, and I met him in the afternoon and spoke to him. He says that all the allegations leveled against him are baseless and that none of the allegations will stand during trial in a court. And while giving him bail, even the High Court says that no transaction more than rupees 5,000 has been found on Mr. Kappan. So he's saying that the police and the STF and all the investigating agencies, they've leveled false charges against him, and that it is going to be a long fight for him, but he will continue the fight. And he also spoke about the hardships faced by him and his family in the last 2 years. He's been released after nearly 28 months of being in prison. So he says it has been a very difficult time for him. For the 2.5 years or so, his family or anyone from Kerala could not come and meet him in the Lucknow and Mathura prison where he was lodged. He's also alleged a lot of inhuman and harsh treatment on him while he was lodged in Mathura jail.
It was a very bad experience, tortured in jail first time. Or harassing, harassments, tortured tappad mara, slapping or elati.
He's spoken about a range of issues, about his identity and about his choice to be a journalist. He says that he, as a journalist, since 2009, he's mostly focused his work on Dalit and minority communities in the country, and that he always wrote and reported about these oppressed communities.
We have heard from Asad about Siddiq Kappan, who, along with the UAPA, was booked under the Prevention of Money Laundering Act. Now, as the name would suggest, the idea behind this act is to prevent money laundering, and crimes under it are investigated by the Enforcement Directorate, that is the ED. To understand how difficult this bail process is under PMLA and the kind of powers that the ED has under this act, my colleague Shashank Bhargav had previously spoken to the Indian Express's Apurva Vishwanath.
Apurva, over 200 petitions had been filed in the Supreme Court against the Prevention of Money Laundering Act. Could you begin by talking about the concerns they were raising?
So Shashank, the Prevention of Money Laundering Act creates this sort of alternate legal system, you know, criminal law system, which you see in legislations like the UAPA and the NDPS. These are stringent laws where bail is almost impossible, and they have wide powers that the state gets with regard to arrest, search and seizure and all of these issues. The Enforcement Directorate, which is the central investigating agency under the PMLA Act, is not considered police, and it upends a lot of the basic first principles of criminal law for us. For example, a statement that you give to a police officer is not admissible in court. The law sort of puts the suspicion on the state against a police officer. So for a statement of the accused to be admissible in court, it has to necessarily be given before a magistrate. But when it comes to the ED, what you say to an ED official can be used against you in a court of law. So this somewhere encroaches on the right against self-incrimination, which is a fundamental right that the Constitution guarantees us.
And Apurva, the reason why what you say to the police is not admissible in a court of law has mainly been done keeping in mind that the police should not be able to take a forced confession out of you, right?
Yes, and it also puts the onus on the state to prove the crime against you. So the right against self-incrimination means that I don't have to disclose myself that I've committed the crime. It is the job of the state. It is the reverse burden on the state to prove the case against me. But when it comes to the ED, this is very different. What you say to an ED official can be used against you in a court of law. So that is one big change when it comes to first principles of criminal law. No other case, not even in terrorism cases, that this is allowed. And then the second issue of when it comes to granting bail, we've talked in the past about how difficult it is to get bail under laws like the UAPA and the NDPS. So PMLA is almost like that. Petitioners in this case argue that it is almost taken to a vanishing point. The chances of you getting bail are almost to a vanishing point, where it's virtually impossible to get bail because there is a twin condition that the law lays down, which is, you know, where the accused has to sort of show to the court that he is not guilty. And this is at a stage when even before the trial has commenced. So even before the trial has happened and you're sort of proven guilty, the accused has a burden to show that he is not guilty, he is not connected to those proceeds of crime, and only at that stage that the court can consider granting bail.
So instead of innocent until proven guilty, it is guilty until proven innocent.
Until proven innocent, yes. Since you are sort of deemed guilty, you're not eligible for bail. So this wide powers that the ED has to sort of arrest and, you know, also deny bail in most circumstances. And also there is a question about, you know, how an accused is treated, you know, principle about innocent until proven guilty. You know, when if you're arrested for an IPC crime, the first thing is the copy of the FIR is made available to you so that you know what are the charges against you. When it comes to the ED, there is something called an ECIR, which is not really an FIR, but similar to an FIR, that the ED doesn't have to disclose it to you. The court has said that this is an internal document and the ED doesn't have to give it to you. And also there is the ED manual, which is sort of the guidebook on how the ED conducts its investigation. That also is not disclosed to the public. So there are a lot of exceptionalism that is created for the PMLA Act.
And next we talk about the death of Odisha Minister Naba Kishore Das. A popular leader from the ruling Biju Janata Dal, Odisha's health minister Das died on Sunday after a police officer shot him in public. The police officer, Assistant Sub-Inspector or ASI Gopal Das, opened fire at Naba Das minutes before he was supposed to attend a program. The state police have said that the motive behind this shooting was unclear, but Gopal Das's family claimed that he was suffering from a mental illness. On the other hand, opposition parties in Odisha have alleged that this shooting was a conspiracy against Das. The Indian Express's Sujit Bishoy joins us in this segment to talk about the shooting and its possible implications on Odisha's politics. So Sujit, before we get into the incident, can you first tell us about Naba Kishore Das?
Yeah. Naba Kishore Das, or he is popularly known as Naba Das, he was one of the popular leaders in western part of Odisha. He was known as one of the close aides of former Odisha Chief Minister J.B. Patnaik. In 2004, actually, Das, the slain minister, has made his electoral debut on a Congress ticket from Jharsuguda Assembly constituency, but he lost the election. And his fortune turned 5 years later when he finally elected from the same Jharsuguda seat in 2009. And since then, he has been representing that seat. So twice in 2009 and 14 on a Congress ticket, and months before the 2019 election, he switched to BJD, the Biju Janata Dal of the ruling party in Orissa.
Well, Das was also one of Odisha's most popular and rich MLAs who has publicly declared his love for guns. And last week, he was gunned down in public by a police officer out in the open. So can you talk to us about that?
So it happened on last Sunday, on 29th of January, I think. So Das was going to his nearby constituency, that is Brajrajnagar, to attend some officials program. And to be very precise, he was going there to inaugurate some offices. So one police ASI Gopal Das, his name is Gopal Das, he is currently serving as station in charge of the Gandhi Chowk police outpost. So who opened fire at the minister, leading to his death. So the incident occurred at around 12:15. Lot of videos have gone viral in which the accused police officer is seen approaching towards the minister's car, and he opened fire as soon as the minister stepped out of his car. So he fired two rounds according to police. Then the minister's supporters and police officers who were present, other police officers who were present on the spot, they tried to overpower the accused cop. And during the push and pull, he also fired another two rounds from his service revolver. So the minister, though, he fired from a point blank range to the minister. He opened fire from a point blank range, targeting the ministers. So the minister suddenly collapsed. Then the supporters returned back into the car and put the minister back in his car and rushed to the nearest district headquarter hospital in Jharsuguda, and later they airlifted to Apollo Hospital, where doctors declared him dead after several hours of treatment.
And do we know why this ASI Gopal Das took the step?
Actually, the reason or the motive behind the killing is still unclear. Even police remain silent on the issue. Yesterday, I tried to speak to some of the police officers. They are admitting that it's a pre-planned murder, but they are quite on the motive part.
Right, but Gopal Das's family has alleged that he was suffering from mental illness, right?
Right, yeah. See, this mental illness issue was actually came moments after one senior police officer, a district level police officer, said maybe he was mentally not sound. And after that, his wife Jayanti, who lives in Barhampur in Ganjam district, so she said that she was treated for some psychiatric issues, and she, according to her, she has the prescriptions. One senior doctor in Barhampur also admitted that Das was under his treatment 7 to 8 years back, and he was not sure whether he is currently under medication or not. So that theory came up from outside, actually. But his service record has no such mentions. He has a very clean service record, this accused police officer. Even he was rewarded many times, and there was no major disciplinary proceedings in his service record. So this mental illness theory is only came after his wife and some police said about this, but his service record has no such mentions.
So the opposition has alleged a conspiracy behind the killing. Can you tell us why they think there's a conspiracy at play here?
Actually, the opposition leaders are not in a mood to buying the theory that the police officer was mentally ill, as stated by his family and even from some police officers that day, the day the incident occurred. So they are questioning if he was mentally ill, then why he was made in charge of a police outpost, why he was assigned duty the day minister visited the town. So that is why they are demanding, why they are calling it a conspiracy from the top level, since they are saying that the government should hand over the case either to the CBI or they should order a judicial probe. Because since the police is an accused in this incident, how they are questioning how the police will investigate against another policeman. And also, since Das was a very senior leader, he has huge support base in number of constituencies in the Western Orissa. He has business empire he has many businesses, basically the mining transport business. That is why the oppositions are alleging that there might be something else than what meets to the eyes.
And Sujit, could you talk about the kind of impact that this incident may have on state politics?
Absolutely. Das demise definitely will have a political impact. See, it happened just a year before the general election. So opposition parties are going to make it an issue since one police officer has killed a minister. That is not very normal in a case, because police officer, security personnel are basically there to protect lives of VIPs and general public. So, and police is under Home Department, which is being headed by the chief minister. So opposition is of course going to make it an issue, and elections are just a year away from now. That is one aspect. And another aspect, if we say about its political implications, Das was a very popular leader in and has base in the entire Western Orissa. So his absence will of course hamper the BJD's prospect in that region. And party needs to find, he was a good organizer actually. So it's a big loss for the ruling party, we can say.
And in the end, we talk about the latest updates on the Adani Group. The shares of Adani Group of companies continued to plunge on Wednesday, a day after it announced the scrapping of the 20,000 crore rupee FPO of Adani Enterprises and said that it would refund the money to the investors. An FPO, also known as a secondary offering, is a process in which an existing company listed on stock exchanges issues new shares to the existing shareholders as well as new investors. A statement by the group said that given the unprecedented situation and the current market volatility, the company is withdrawing the completed FPO transaction. Ahead of the market opening on Thursday, Gautam Adani, through a video statement, had said that the FPO withdrawal decision was taken considering the volatility of the market.
Considering the volatility of the market seen yesterday, our board strongly felt that it would not have been morally correct to proceed with the FPO. For me, the interest of my investor is paramount and everything is secondary. Hence, to insulate the investors from potential losses, we have withdrawn the FPO.
The extraordinary development has come amid a massive market rout in Adani Group stocks following the release of the Hindenburg Research Report on 24th January that accused the group of brazen stock manipulation and accounting fraud. The report was published just 2 days before the group's flagship Adani Enterprises FPO of rupees 20,000 crore was scheduled to open for subscription on January 27th. The Adani Group equated the allegations against its companies to a calculated attack on India, its institutions, and the India growth story. The Adani Group said, and I quote, "This is not merely an unwarranted attack on any specific company, but a calculated attack on India, the independence, integrity, and quality of Indian institutions, and the growth story and ambition of India," unquote. After the report was published, shares of Adani Group of companies lost over 80,000 crore rupees in market capitalization, which continued to plunge this week. The sharp decline in the shares of the group led to further erosion in the net worth of Gautam Adani, and as of Thursday noon, he had slipped to the 16th spot in the Forbes billionaire list, with a net worth of $69.2 billion. The Reserve Bank of India has sought details from banks about the exposure to Adani Group companies amid the sustained fall in the shares of group companies and the withdrawal of the FPO. You were listening to Three Things by the Indian Express. Today's show was hosted by me, Rahil Philippos, and written and produced by Uchha Sarmin with the help of Anviti Singh. It was edited and mixed by Abhishek Kumar. If you like the show, then do subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also recommend the show to someone who you think will like it, share it with a friend or someone in your family. It's the best way for people to get to know about us. You can also tweet us @ExpressPodcast or write to us at podcast@indianexpress.com.